up to yonder, beyond the lights, neon, fluorescent. My essence is something to ponder. Your talent ain't something to squander. Blessed and favored so highly, anointed and portrait I might be. This is that all that podcast featuring Kyrie.
Welcome to another episode of the All That Podcast. Today would be a very unique conversation podcast because I've never interviewed or had a comedian, a professional comedian on the show before. I've had, you know, musical artists, I've had lawyers, I've had judges, I've had, you know, all kind of people, but I've never had a comedian.
Wow, what an honor.
Yeah, man, you're the first. So I guess I should tell you the comedian's name. I have Sammy Obeid on the show today. And this guy has been in the game for a while. I was actually watching a clip of you on Conan's show back in the day. And that was like 2013?
That's right.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's been in the game a while. And I'll bring that up later, back up later, by the way. But so, yeah, he has a new comedy special called Martyr in Safe Space on YouTube. He has a show on Netflix called The 100 Humans. We're doing all kind of experiments on people. So, man, you're killing it. You're killing it. So I kind of want to start off with the just explaining the 100 humans thing, because I kind of watched a couple of episodes and it's like, can you explain some experiments on like sex and all these different things that we, you know, participate in life. Right. So can you kind of explain to the audience what the gist of the show is?
Yeah, so 100 humans is about, well, we have 100 people and we round them up and we do experiments on them over the course of a few weeks. The experiments are like mostly like social experiments. We're not like feeding them poison to see if they're not. But it's like a lot of like, you know, life's questions that you might have wanted to ask, you know, like do when people put their toilet paper on the handle, do they do it overhand or underhand?
Right.
You know, that was another thing that we asked. Or like, how much toilet paper do people use? Or things like, you know, if a guy's a good dancer, does he have a higher sperm count? You know, the stuff that people think about all the time.
Let me know that one, because I think I'm a good dancer, so, you know.
Yeah, we actually, unfortunately, did not trace a correlation between dancing and sperm count.
Ah, man, I was about to say, I'm about to be.
You can't be both. No, I mean, just keep eating pineapple, but, you know,
it's about to say, man, I'm gonna be up there with Elon and Nick Cannon, you know. So I always like to you know, kind of get to the origin of, you know, why somebody does what they do. So for you, what started you off in comedy? Did you, as a young child, were you the kid that was always keeping everybody laughing, kind of the class clown? Or comedy was something that kind of one day just came upon you, like, man, I'm funny, maybe I should try this out? How did you know that comedy is what you wanted to do with your life?
Yeah, I mean, I always was a kid who was making people laugh, and it was never really intentional. Like, some of the times it was intentional, but a lot of times it wasn't. Like, it was never my mission in life to be the funny kid. It just kind of like fell into my lap at some point. I would say things and people would laugh, especially when I was not trying. And so people would always tell me, man, you're funny, you should do stand up. And I was like, oh, you know, I'm like, that's cool, but I don't think that's like a real job. I don't think I can really do that.
Right.
So I kind of tuned out the suggestions to do it until finally after college, I was just like, man, I gotta try some stuff, because I don't want to work at this desk job. So
right.
So stand up was one of the things I tried, and I got into, I'm gonna mention this, I don't mention this a lot in my origin story, but I got into like this speech and debate competition at a local community college.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave this funny speech and I ended up winning the national tournament. And that's kind of what prompted me into like getting on stage and doing stand up. And the national tournament, believe it or not, was in Houston. So
really? H-Town. Yeah, wait. Shandy wants to say hello.
Hi.
She's hyperventilating over you right now.
Good to see you.
Yeah, breathe. You need a bit oxygen. You need, what's up? What's
going on? Yeah, get that breathing checked out, but look, everything else, great. Right.
This has happened often in Europe. What's going on? So you win the speech thing, and that kind of spearheaded what you're doing now.
Yeah, somebody had approached me right before I left for that competition and said, hey, I think you're really funny. You should try stand-up. There's this competition here in San Jose at the San Jose Improv in the Bay Area. He's like, you should try it. And I was like, oh, no, let me see how this, you know, this national competition goes. And then I went to Houston, won the thing, and it was there in Houston that I was like, I'm going to try stand-up comedy.
Great things happen here in Houston, man. I'm just,
they really do. They really do. The birth of a lot of stars and stuff.
Yes, you know? For your next special. I'm just saying.
I would. You know, I've only performed in Houston twice, actually. I performed once for the Vans Warped Tour. I don't know if you heard of that, but it's like this, you know, it was like a moving tour. I don't know if they, I think they still do it, but they had comedy 1 year. So I did it in 2015, and we performed in a little outdoor tent, and it was so fun. And then the second time, I did this community center for a bunch of Indian American folks. And it was like 200 people, and it was one of the best gigs I ever had. So Houston, great track record for comedy so far. I'm 2 for 2 in Houston, so I'm all about coming back.
Hey, come back, man. We have great venues, great people, so let's do it.
Let's do it.
So, all right, let's get into the reason we're here.
Yeah.
The Martyr in Safe Space. You started off with saying something that was interesting to me, right? You were talking about liberals.
Yeah.
And I guess if I had to... I don't really like labeling myself, but I guess if I had to, I would probably be leaning toward being a liberal.
Right.
But you said something that was interesting to me, and I kind of want you to expound on. You were saying how you never met a liberal who didn't think they were smarter than someone else. And then you said that goes against the definition of what a liberal is. And then you put the word bigot and the word liberal in the same sentence when most people would, you know, correlate that with more right wing, more conservative. So can you explain that? Because I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's been so much political talk in the last years, and there's been such a great divide. And, you know, it's always, you know, liberals making fun of conservatives, conservatives making fun of liberals. And I'm all for that. Everybody make fun of everybody. That's great. But you often hear, you know, liberals being the butt of a lot of jokes. You often hear like these liberals. So I always wanted to know, am I a liberal? Because I lean left on a lot of things. I'm about social progress, social change, and respecting others and all that stuff. But I guess I'm a little conservative in some ways, maybe economically and such. Mm-hmm. But you know, and I'm like for free speech and stuff like that. So in some ways, you know, I don't feel like I am a pure liberal. So I just wanted to know what liberal meant specifically. So I Googled it for once. I was like, I should know what this thing is. And the definition of liberal was somebody who accepts and respects points of view, behavior, opinions that are different from yours.
Right.
Right. Which makes sense. It's like, yeah, if you're liberal, you're fighting for social progress. You're fighting for like minority groups, the underrepresented, the disenfranchised. Like, yes, that's what we do. But then I thought about it. Are we really respecting all points of view that are different from ours?
And nobody does.
Nobody does. Nobody does that. Most people I know, especially liberals, are always talking smack about, you know, conservatives saying they're dumb, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And it's like, hey, you know, like I said, all fun and games to make fun of people, but by definition, you're not a liberal.
Right. Exactly. I thought that was genius, actually. So you were saying that you are a proponent, that you do believe in free speech, right? So the thing that, and you kind of alluded to what I'm about to ask in the special. You know, after post Oscars, right, everybody is kind of talking about, you know, the artistic freedom of a comedian, you know, or should we reimagine, you know, what a comedian's limits are, like you shouldn't be able to do the XYZ. And you kind of said in a special, you know, you can be offended, like you can be, you can be offended. So as a comedian, you personally, do you have lines that you don't touch, or how do you go about that? And are you ready for people coming back at you when you might offend them?
Totally. And that's a great question. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I only cover so much in the special. Like, I could go on for hours and hours about free speech, because I will say right away that, like, I believe in free speech, but at the same time, speech is never free, right? There will always be consequences to literally anything you say. So the government can protect us to some degree and say, oh, you have the right to say this, that, and the other.
Right.
But if you say something that pisses somebody off, you might get your ass kicked. That's on you, you know? You say something that offends people, or you say something that gets your job lost, that's on you. Like, that can happen. Like, I believe in free speech to the extent where it's like, yeah, we should be able to speak freely, but like, you should also be ready for the consequences of what you have to say. And I get to that, you know, somewhat the special, because in the context of comedy, when you say things, generally what happens is people will get angry or offended or triggered in some way. And as a comedian, I think you have to understand that that's human nature, because we all get offended at something at some point.
Right.
So going to the question about like lines, where I draw the lines, my thing in comedy is I want to be able to talk about anything, any subject. The language I use, the way I phrase things, I always keep people's feelings in mind. Not like, oh, I'm going to pad things so that your feelings aren't hurt, but it's like, you know, there's got to be some lines, in my opinion. It's like, I don't think you should be saying hurtful racial slurs. I don't think you should be saying things that, like, you know, make people sad but don't like really add a lot of value to the whole show. You know what I mean? So it's like, yeah, of course there's things that I don't think that people should say, or I would say on stage, but I want to be able to talk about any topic. You know what I mean? So if it's gun violence, I want to be able to talk about that. Even if it's a tough subject, I want to work into it, get people on board. If it's like, you know, abortion, pro-life, I want to talk about that. So topics, I want to be able to talk about anything. The language, the choices I make, and the way I deliver it, those things I keep people's feelings in mind.
Right. So you are a Palestinian, correct?
That is correct. I'm Palestinian American.
Okay. So do you feel a responsibility to, because as an African American, like a comedian, that I, when something happens, right, anything like, say it's the George Floyd situation, or it's whatever it is, whenever something happens, I look for Dave Chappelle's voice, because I know that he is going to speak up for me, you know what I mean? Or, you know, or put something in a genius way, you know, as only he could. So do you feel that responsibility to be that voice for your people?
In a lot of ways, yes, because there's not quite a lot of representation in our community at the point. I mean, at right now, like, if you look at who we have speaking out for our voices, there's a few people, and one of them from Houston, you probably know Mo Ammer. I gotta give a shout out. And he's done a lot of stuff with Chappelle. But like, you know, aside from him and a handful of other people, there are not a lot of us. So, you know, by default, there are a lot of expectations of us to, you know, speak for our people and speak for, you know, Palestinian Americans and their opinions and their voice. So yes. So like, I definitely have to put a lot of thought into what I say when I talk about those issues, because I am, whether or not they look to me for my voice, I am representing them, because through the eyes of other people, like, oh, that's the only Palestinian I'm ever going to see today or this week or this month,
right?
This comedian. So I'm going to map whatever he's saying onto what I believe about all Palestinians.
Right.
It's just a natural thing that happens, you know?
Do you ever feel, or has your culture, or, you know, your people made you feel kind of pigeonholed from the perspective of, like, I know a lot of Black comedians feel they have to do certain type of jokes to appeal to the culture. So do you ever feel the pressure to not venture out too far, to lose maybe your audience? Or do you feel the need that you always have to include, you know, something for your people?
Right. That's a great question. I think about it all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's a difficult thing to navigate, because, like, on one hand, like I told you, I want to talk about literally everything. But a lot of times, like, my Arab American fan base will come to my show or come to my social media hoping for me to talk about these issues. So, and it's not like I'm including it just for them. I'm including it because I also want to talk about it. But, like, you know, sometimes they might come to a show and I only do one or two Palestinian related jokes, and then, you know, for the rest I'm talking about like sex or something like that.
Right.
You know, I've noticed some of my fans, so I really kind of gauge who's in the crowd on that day, where I am, and I kind of tailor my set to that occasion so people feel like they got what they wanted to hear. But yeah, I absolutely do feel the need to speak on it, but it's really only going to work if I want to speak on it. So, and I do. So, like, if something happens, you know, in Israel, Palestine, and, like, you know, it's a big issue, I got to comment on it. I got to write material on it. So I definitely make that choice.
You were a math teacher?
I was a math teacher for 6 years.
Six years. So, okay, I guess my question is, I have two questions. One, how were you in the classroom? Were you like teaching through jokes or teaching creative? Uh-huh. You know, because when we have creative minds, we do it a little different. You know what I mean? And the second question is, how has math impacted your comedy?
Right. So, great question. So as a teacher, I love being a teacher. I felt like it was definitely a natural thing for me. And I was, you know, funny and joking around with the kids and stuff. But that was actually a bad move on my part because they started to see me as, oh, the funny teacher, like, it's kind of a joke. Like, so I kind of started to get taken advantage of in the last few years I was teaching. Like, as I got funnier, they were like paying attention less.
Right.
And yeah, so I had to kind of go back and forth, like good cop, bad cop myself. But like, it almost doesn't work as a comedian. You know, at some point, it's just like, you're just the funny guy. So near the end of my teaching career, like they weren't taking me seriously. I had a lot of disruptions in class. And it was hard for me to manage. And I also didn't want to be there as much because I was, stand-up was taken off. So so that's kind of how it ended.
Right.
it didn't end beautifully, but I started as a very noble teacher who just wasn't that funny.
Gotcha.
But yeah, you know, so I studied math in school. I taught math. Math was just a thing that I was good at. You know, I tell people this, like, you know, we hate math so much, but like, you know, as a culture, as a society, but like half of people are good at math, right? You're either like a math person or a language person.
And I'm definitely a language person.
Okay, great. Yeah. Okay, good to know. I was a math person, and so it wasn't like I liked doing math. Like, I always thought that I never liked my math teachers. Like, this is boring. I don't like the homework. But I was so good at it that when I got to college and I was trying to figure out what I was going to major in, I just started taking some math classes to see how quickly I could breeze through them. And I did. So I was like, I'm going to major in this because it's easy for me. So I majored in math and then as you get like higher in the math level, because, you know, when you're like in elementary school and when you're in high school, they're like, all right, here's some problems. Do these, like, learn 2 + 2, memorize it. And you're like, why? You're like, don't ask why. You're going to just do it. This is what you got to do to grade. Like, they don't tell you why you're learning math. They don't tell you why things mean things in math. They don't tell you, like, they don't prove why these things are true.
Right.
When you get to college math, you start to learn, like, why these things are true. And you start to see, like, the vast applications of them. And it's pretty mind-blowing. But most people never make it to that stage.
Right.
So as I, you know, this thing that I hated my whole life, but I was good at, as I got to the end of my college career, I was starting to really love it. And it definitely impacted the way that I, you know, see the world. Because first of all, I didn't want to work in math. I didn't want to get a job as an accountant or an actuary who does like insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up doing stand-up, and I'm like, how can I use my math mind to do stand-up? And really, it's like, it comes to like doing math is a lot about like making proofs. It's like showing, it's like, this is true, then this is true, then this must be true, you know? So it's like, for instance, like, here's the definition of liberal. Here's what most people who say they're liberals are doing. These are not true. Therefore, we are this, right? So it's kind of like constructing arguments. But I also talk about math in my sets too. You know, I do like some math related jokes. So it's affected it both in the content, but also the framework to which I write and see things in the world.
Right. What is your process of writing? Speaking of, when you're writing jokes, like, how do you get the inspiration? Do you like go out? Because I know a lot of comedians like to hang out in clubs or just hang out where people are so they can get material and get inspired. What's your process of, what's the process for you? Like, what is your process to get inspiration for your material? Is it like watching the news or is it like a plethora of things?
Yeah, I have a few. So first of all, just being out in the real world, doing something, like you're at the store. Like, cashier says something to you and like, okay, that's funny. Let me, you know, you run into somebody on the street, or like, you know, a friend texts you, says something funny. These things can all inspire. So social interactions are always a good way. Sometimes I'll just be like, you know, a lot of times, like, I'm at the gym or I'm going for a run or a walk, and like, when the oxygen's flowing to the brain, like, you get a lot of ideas. So like, an idea will come to me like, oh, that's a funny wordplay. Let me make that into a joke. But my favorite way to write is probably by getting high, smoking marijuana.
That increases your creativity.
It does.
The ganja.
The ganja. Yes. And you know, we have a great selection in California. But yeah, it's kind of like I started, you know, smoking weed when I was like really young. I started smoking weed when I was 13.
Mm-hmm.
So it became part of my creative process really, really young. And it's not for everybody. For some people, it just makes them tired and hungry.
Yeah.
But for me, it always like stimulates my mind. So if I get, if I just get like a little bit high and I have like a pen and paper, I'll come out with like, you know, 10 minutes of new jokes.
Dang. Just off, bam, 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 quick.
Oh, like that, yeah. It took a while. I mean, when I started, you know, when I started comedy, I would get like 10 minutes of material and then I'd read them the next day and people would be like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? Like, this doesn't make any sense. But yeah, like now I figured out, like I know like, okay, this will actually be funny. This will actually be funny.
Right. Have you ever bombed?
Oh my God, I bomb at least once a week.
Once a week?
Yeah. Well, in the past it was involuntary. In the past it was like you bomb just because you're not prepared.
Right.
You know? But you know, now like as to reach the professional level, it's like relative. Like bombing is just not doing great.
Yeah.
You know? Like when you've been doing it for this long, you should be doing great every time. But you might go on stage and like want to take a couple risks and like piss off some audience members, or you might want to go on stage and like, or, you know, you're just not, you're having kind of an off day. You're not really feeling the rhythm, or, you know, there's a lot of layers to bombing. But like, right, you know, if I'm in a room where people didn't, you know, pay to come see me, it's kind of a random place, I'm just showing up, I'll try new stuff and I'm happy to bomb to like make sure that right, new stuff works or not.
How did you get to the place where you are comfortable failing? Because I feel in the arena that you do it in, it's because I feel like people will go to war before they stand in front of a group of people and speak. Right. You know what I mean? And people are afraid of that that negative reaction, right? So how right, do you get to this place, to the place where you're like, all right, that happened, but I'm gonna come back and I'm gonna do it again and again and again.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, it on one hand, like, yeah, it takes like a while to get there. And on the other hand, like, you never really get comfortable with it.
Yeah.
Like, so like, yeah, in the beginning, it's like every bomb was so painful. But then at some point you become used to it. And it's like, you have to be comfortable with the fact that just because the crowd is not laughing doesn't mean it's not funny. Like, there's so many variables into why the crowd laughs at a specific thing. Maybe you messed up a word, you know, maybe it was you just didn't come off correctly, or maybe it is them, you know? I tell this story sometimes. So like, I went and did a open mic one night. There was maybe like, you know, 20 people in the crowd. I tried out a joke and nobody laughed, zero laughs. And you know, sometimes as a comedian, you have to be like, all right, well, if it got no laughs, is it worth ever doing again? You know, should I just know to kind of scrap this forever? And sometimes you have to be like, I'm going to try it again, you know, out of faith, whatever. So I go to a college the next week and I try that joke again and it got a big reaction. And I was like, wow, that's so awesome that I, you know, I'm glad I didn't scrap it. And
right,
this kid comes up to me after and he looked like really like tired and like he'd been through a lot. And he's like, man, I had a really rough week this week. You know, I'm an engineering student and this is like, this has been killing me. I've been going through some personal stuff. And to be honest, man, I was having some like suicidal thoughts earlier this week. So wow, I came to this show to like look for some like happiness. And man, your show was so inspiring and so moving. And I really liked that joke. And I'm you know, I'm feeling like a completely different person now. Like he said that to me. And I'm like, yo, if I didn't bring that joke to that show and give it another chance just because those 20 people didn't laugh, you know?
Right.
So that's why sometimes I tell the crowd, like, you better laugh at this joke. Otherwise, you know, you're a murderer, you know?
Oh, man, that's hilarious. So who are some of your comedic heroes?
Yeah. You know, the first time I ever, like, watched stand-up comedy and thought, like, damn, this is really cool, like, I understand why comedy is so cool now, was when I watched Chris Rock's Bigger and Blacker. Classic special, 1999. I was a kid, I was 15 years old.
Yep.
And I was watching it on HBO, I believe. And he was just like hitting the nail on the head on every like political issue he was doing. Like, oh, the Monica Lewinsky stuff, like the Republicans.
I think he talked about OJ.
You talked about OJ, like everything that, as you know, and as a kid, you know, you see these headlines on the news and they're so dark and they're so like, and they're like, how do you make light of this? And then you see a comedian come out and just go, bam, bam, like best jokes written on that subject. And I was like, this is amazing.
Right.
And I remember just being glued to the TV and watching the whole special multiple times, and it was just like, wow, that's really cool. I still didn't really see it for me at the time, but I just remember seeing it and being like, wow, that's why stand-up is not only cool, but it's necessary. Right. Like, this helps our society heal, you know?
It does. I always say that, I'm gonna let you continue. I just wanted to.
Oh, yeah.
I always say that comedians are the smartest people on earth. To be able to talk about the things you guys talk about and frame it in a way that makes people laugh, and then starting off with a joke, then ending with the same joke. You know, I mean, it's just always, yeah. I've said that multiple times, that you guys are the smartest people to me on earth.
Well, not the ones I know, but there are so many smart
Oh man.
It's definitely there's definitely a level of intelligence required for comedy.
Oh, for
yeah,
sure.
I mean,
for sure.
The way, and you can see, I mean, sometimes if you watch a comedian's face closely, you can see the wheels turning when they're on stage, you know?
Definitely. Definitely can see that.
Yeah. So Chris Rock for sure really inspired me. And then I saw, you know, and then, you know, Chappelle's show came out, and I got into Chappelle through Half Baked, and then the Chappelle show came out, and then Killing Him Softly came out. And that was another like, wow, you know? So that was really inspiring. And then, it's like, there's so many comedians, like once you like actually get into comedy, there's like so many really, really funny comedians. Right. But Jerry Seinfeld is like classically known as like a really, really funny comedian. I never really liked his stand-up. I love the Seinfeld show.
I've never seen a Seinfeld stand-up ever.
Never seen him do like jokes ever.
Never.
He's a great writer. It's like very clean. It's just like, it's very like broad. It's just like, all right, here's something, like nobody's really going to be pissed off at this. It's like, you know, kind of like something for everybody, but it's not like, it doesn't like press buttons, you know?
Right.
Seinfeld was created by, the show Seinfeld was created by Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David.
Right.
And Larry David went on to make Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yep.
And Curb Your Enthusiasm is such a fucking hilarious show. So I became really obsessed with like Larry David's comedic mind, even though he's not really a stand-up. But
yeah,
the way he took like everyday situations and showed how like you just made it very relatable, like whenever like we have something about us makes us kind of an asshole, he kind of like brings it out and was able
right
to, like, really show it. Yeah. Nice. So definitely those three inspired me growing up for sure.
Gotcha. You mentioned how there is like an endless amount of comedians that people don't even know about. So who is someone that might not have a blue check mark on Instagram or whatever that you think deserves more recognition? If you could.
Oh, wow. Well, in terms of doesn't have a blue check mark, I mean, there's so many like up and coming stand up comedians who are really, really funny. But like, there are a lot of people who I think are just like legendary that when I say them, they're not like a household name, you know? For instance, and this is, you know, he's a comedian, but he's also like a mega talent. Reggie Watts. Have you heard of Reggie Watts?
I have not.
So Reggie Watts is just like super talented, like does musical stuff. He's also the musician on the James Corden show, the late night show. But he's, every time I see him, I'm like, wow, this is like next level. He's not like as much like a traditional stand-up comedian, like here's a joke, but like he does musical stuff and he's just like mega talented.
Kind of like what Jamie Foxx did that in a little bit in one of his specials.
I mean, speaking of like all across talent, I mean, there's nothing Jamie Foxx can't do. That's like, he's just like,
yeah, he's woo, off the chain. He's on a different level.
Yes. Yeah. I always, when I think of like just really, really funny people, I mean, he's famous now, but like some people still know him. Eric Andre.
Yeah. I know him.
Just like super like weird, funny, just like, just like really, really funny person. Yeah, I mean, there's so many funny people. It's so crazy. When you go to a comedy show, there's like so many different styles. You know, you see the different styles of people. But like, you know, I just tell people all the time, like, go to like a local stand-up show. You'll see people who make you laugh more than like the last comedy special.
We have great ones here in Houston too. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, we have great ones. So yeah, people, if you don't have anything to do, especially during the week, that's when I used to go. Go hit up a comedy show.
Yes, right after watching my stand-up special.
Yes, right after you watch Martyr and Safe Space. Yes. So I mentioned that you were on Conan in 2013, and you got like 6, 7, maybe more minutes on there, but you killed it. It was like you were talking about Chris Rock hitting every, when you watched that special, but you were the same way. You were hitting everything, and the joke you told about the pandas, and you put it in the racial terms, and was genius. So what was your coolest moment in your career thus far? Because I think that's pretty cool, because, you know, you remember in the 80s, especially back then, if you can get on Carson's show, like, that was the thing for a comedian, to get that 6, 7 minute slot where you can do your thing, and that was like the thing. So for you to be on a late night show as a comedian, I would imagine that was a big deal. So in your career thus far, what has been the coolest, most surreal, like, whoa, this is really happening moment?
That probably was it, for a few reasons, because at the time I was doing this streak of performing stand-up 1,000 days in a row. And it was this thing that I set out to do, where I was like, I'm going to perform every day. And it kind of like, I was like, I'm going to do a year, and then I ended up being 2 years, and then ended up being 1,000 days every day in a row. And Conan was at the very end of that. It was like day 998. Like, that was the only day to get me up. But it was like the big finish line for me after like just 3 years of just like going at it. I finally got my, you know, my TV break, and I brought all my friends. So like, we were all chilling in the back, like on the massage chairs, like eating all the free food and just having so much fun and laughing. And it was such a great celebration. And then I went out and I did my set. And the crazy thing was, like, a couple months before that happened, before I even knew that I was going to be on Conan, I had a nightmare where I was on Conan and I bombed.
Wow.
Yeah.
And this is before you knew you were going to be on there.
Before I even knew, before anything. Yeah. I had a dream that I walked out of the curtains. Conan was like, Sammy obeyed. And then I went up there and I forgot my first joke. And I was like, and then I was like sweating. And I like, I just remember like the bright lights and like people, I could hear people coughing, but not like laughing. And then I start going into a joke, and I remember like starting to riff, and like it didn't work out. And then people started to boo me. And then I just retreated off stage. And then I remember Conan coming on the stage, and he was like, hey, I'm really sorry about that, guys. We totally made a mistake in booking that guy.
Wow. That is nuts. And then I woke up. But you definitely did not do what you dreamed. So that turned out good.
It was crazy, because walking out there, it was like, it almost felt like the dream again. Cause they're like, all right, Sam, you're up next. And I was like, it felt like the beginning of that dream. And then I went out there and it ended well. And so it was very gratifying. And yeah, at the end, you know, Conan called me over to the couch, which is like the, you know, the big, like,
yeah,
you want to get in the late night thing. So that was like, it was pretty much of an honor.
Who else was on the show that night?
It was an actor, Seth Green, who's been in a lot of movies.
Yep.
And I forget, there was one more, actor, actress. I forget who it was.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So you're at this point in your career to where, you know, you got some special, what special are you on?
This is technically my second special.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I remember you saying you did it, you shot it at the same place.
Yeah. So I shot it at the same places that I shot the first one. Yeah.
Got it. So you're on your second special, got a Netflix show, been on Conan. So right, where are you in your mind, in your career? Are you like, how are you feeling? Are you feeling like, you know, I'm here, or I have way more work to do? Like, what is your end goal? Like, what are we shooting for?
Yeah. Well, I definitely have way more work to do, but I love the work at this point. Like, I've figured out what I love about this, and I do what I love. I feel right now like I'm at the beginning of being discovered.
Right.
And you know, to clarify, I've been doing this now for 15 years, which is long.
15 years.
Yes, 15 years. Oh. When you look at people who made it, it usually happens faster for them, for sure. Like, if you look at somebody famous, they usually got the ball rolling 5, 6, 7 years in.
Right.
There are some cases of people who don't end up popping until like 15, 20. Mm-hmm. For instance, like Russell Peters, who's one of like the, you know, biggest names around the world. He wasn't discovered till like he was like 16, 17 years in.
Right.
You know, whereas, you know, Dave Chappelle, on the other hand, he started as a kid. Everybody knew who he was by the time he was, you know, 16, 17, you know?
Right.
So of the people who make it, it, you know, usually it happens a lot faster. But if you look at comedians across average, and you look at how long they've been doing it, I mean, there's people who do it for 30, 40 years, never get discovered, you know? Yeah. So The thing is, I had some, you know, I had some cool breaks, like the Conan thing that happened in my year six. So it's like, it goes in waves. Like I had this moment where like everybody knew I was that, like at the end of that 1,000 days, and I like got on Conan, I got in the New York Times, all this stuff. And then I got all these opportunities thrown at me, but I wasn't ready mentally. I wasn't ready in terms of like being prepared to like have my own TV show. So I got to shoot a pilot, but it didn't work out.
Wow.
You know, I got cast on a bunch of things that never got picked up. So I had a bunch of chances and then they all flopped. That's the other thing about comedy is the industry will hand you a bunch of things, but if you like foil enough of them, like you're done.
Right.
You know? So that's kind of what happened with me. So by 2017, 2018, I thought it was basically over for me. And then I got cast on the Netflix show. And I was like, that's going to pick things up. But the Netflix show didn't end up dropping until March 13th, 2020.
Ah, 2 years later.
Yeah. But that date, yeah. March 13th, 2020.
COVID.
That was the first date, yeah, of the lockdown.
Yes. Wow.
So my first show... day. Where we have 100 people in close proximity doing fun experiments with each other comes out when that's illegal.
Right.
So it was cool. Like a lot of people watched it. It was at the beginning of the pandemic. A lot of people were home and watched it. Mm-hmm. But there was no question of whether it could be picked up again in that moment, you know? So all that momentum and like, oh, I was like, the show's going to come out. I'm going to go out for auditions and all this stuff. So, but the, you know, this is me just complaining. Like everybody was slowed down by the pandemic. Right.
Right.
So that happened, and then like last year, for instance, I was like nearing 500,000 followers on TikTok for my videos, and then I got banned permanently on TikTok. So
dang, come on TikTok, give my man his account back.
Yeah, yeah. So I started a new account. I'm fine. Like it started a new account like a year ago. It took me maybe 9 months to get to 10,000 followers.
Man, now you have 500,000.
Yeah, now I'm back at 100,000, and they're rolling in every day.
Okay, that's good.
But it's like there's always been these hurdles. There's always been something that's like holding me back. At the end of the day, I can only take responsibility. It's the only thing, yeah, holding me back is me. So I know that, and I know it's taken a long time, but I have no doubt in my mind that I'm eventually going to make it to where I want to. So to answer your question, I want to, this special that I put out on YouTube, obviously it's self-released. I want people to see it. But I know that I will be making more specials in the future that people will see me on a, like a bigger platform.
Yes.
And that's kind of why I'm really like pushing the special. I want people to see me like this is me before I'm getting put onto the big stage.
Right.
So, so I want to make more specials, but I also want to do my own show. Whether it's like another like version of 100 Humans, like I've always wanted to do something like that where we do experiments. We like collect data on how people really are.
Yeah.
That's always been super fun to me. Even if I just had my own like scripted show, that would be cool too. Like whether it's like a, not necessarily a sitcom, but like, you know, like kind of a series.
Yeah.
So I want to do TV. I would love to be in a movie. I do want to do kind of like all the typical things that like an entertainment personality does. But the main thing is that I really want to put out like quality content that makes people like think and just evaluate like life and where they are. And that's kind of comes from the whole math thing.
Right. So in every industry, you know, you have to be ready to adapt, right? You have to survive. So as a person who came up in a time of traditional going to comedy clubs, you know, working on your material in the clubs, yada, 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 going through the process, maybe hiring an agent, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
How did you transition, or was were you fearful at all, especially with the emergence of social media and these Instagram comedians just taking off overnight, and you're like, man, I've been in this for 10 years, 15 years, and these guys just put a video out and this is a million people and they're getting all these opportunities. So can you talk about the emergence of the quote unquote overnight
success? That's such a great question, because it's like, that's my life. Mm-hmm. It's like literally every day I see somebody who just started like a year or two ago or yesterday who's like an overnight success, and I've been working at this thing for 15 years.
Right.
Putting so much thought into everything I release, and then they kind of like mindlessly make a skit and it blows up, but it's like no slight to them. The thing is, end of the day, the only thing you can do is be like, love to them, respect to them. I hope they get what they deserve. I'm going to get mine too.
Right.
You know? And it's hard because we're human. You can't not have moments of jealousy and frustration when you see that stuff.
Right.
But being in it for 15 years now, it's like it's happened so many times. And like, really, like, I started when like YouTube was like coming out. YouTube was like, all right, if you put the right clip on YouTube, you could blow up. But like, don't put too much on YouTube because you don't want people to see your stuff too much, because then they won't, you know, they'll have seen all your material. Like that's how I grew up. You know what I mean? Like, put a clip on MySpace. Like, that's when I started. You know.
shout out to Tom.
Shout out to Tom.
Yeah.
And then it became like, all right, you know, put some clips on YouTube, put some on Facebook, and then it became like, put your clips on Instagram, and then it became Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, do the whole thing, right? It took me a while to pivot into that. Like, it was a time where it was like, people were like, do this. I was like, but yeah, this could be a fad. We'll see. So I'm going to kind of do it, but it could be, you know, I always put my stuff on social media, but not a lot. And then I realized a few years ago, I was like, no, this legit is the future. So,
yes.
It was a total pivot, but like, it's actually, at first I was a little resistant to it because I was like, oh, but I thought this is how you do it. You do your comedy, you get discovered, you put your stuff out there. But then I realized this is so liberating because now everything's in my hands. Like, all I need to do is keep putting the stuff out there, get the people who want to see my stuff to see my stuff, and then I can just speak directly to them. I don't need a middleman. I don't need a network to like broker a deal and like own rights to my material. I own the rights to my material. So while it is a lot of work and effort to like get up to that place, it's so much more worth it now that we can connect directly with our fan base.
Right. So there is possibly, you know, a young man or woman listening to this podcast, and, you know, they want to take the more traditional route. They don't want to just make, you know, the videos on Instagram, you know, the little skits. They want to be a stand-up. They want to write jokes. They want to, you know, be very good at their craft, so, and make it that way. So what advice would you have for those people?
You know, there's no one way to make it. Mm-hmm. I've been around long enough to see people make it in a lot of different ways. In fact, you know, 10 years ago, before the internet, like, you know, really like became the way to like sell yourself as a comedian, there was a lot of people like saying like, okay, you do stand-up comedy, but you got to do something else. You're either a writer, you're an actor, you do sketches. What is your thing? And that was common advice, you know, 10 years ago. And I heard a lot of people, I still heard a lot of comedians at the time be like, I just want to do stand-up. I just want to do, and I would be like, yo, like, but that's not going to be it. You have to have something else.
Right.
But some of those people who said that I'm just going to do stand-up, they're huge stand-up comedians now. Mm-hmm. Like, so there's no one way to make it. You can actually still blow up on the traditional route. Is it less likely now? Absolutely. Like, should you play the game? You should. The odds are in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But you, if you're that funny, people will see you, undeniably.
Facts. The talent will be there.
We'll
always say, like in sports, you know, about going to a small college, or some people like going to HBCUs. Like, if you're that dude, like, they'll find you.
Right.
You just show up. Right. Yeah. So I just thought of this question, and I should have asked it earlier when we were talking about it. But you, the transition from math teacher to stand-up, as a creative, you know, your family does not always understand things, right? Or your friends might not always understand things. So would you say you had support in making that transition, or was it like, dude, you need to, you know, what you're doing? Like, you know.
I'm blessed. I had a lot of support because my family was always like super supportive of the arts. And my friends always, you know, thought I was funny, so they were supportive of this idea.
Right.
Part of the reason though for all that is because I was a good student. Like, I did well in school. I was like a straight A's kid. So for my parents, it wasn't as much as like, why are you throwing all that away for this? It was more like, you can do good at anything, so I'm sure you can do good at this. Wow. You know? So I was really blessed that they had that attitude. With my friends, it was like that too, but it was also like, my friends are like, yo, you could have been like an investment banker making like $300,000 a year. Like, what are you doing?
Right.
You know? So there was some of that, but just gotta take the route that you commit to. And like a lot of my friends from like college, I mean, they're millionaires, you know, they're living a nice financially secure life. I mean, you know, maybe their stock prices just went down last week, but whatever, you know, like they're living it. But you know, mostly everybody who I'm close with, they've always been respectful of it.
Right. So lastly, because I know you have to go, you're a busy guy. You mentioned earlier when the college student came up to you and told you how much that joke you told meant to him, and he was having suicidal thoughts, and you know, you kind of, in a way, saved his life. So what is the feeling that you look for people to have when they leave a Sammy Obade show? What is the feeling? How do you want them to walk away from your show?
There's so many ways they could feel that would make me feel great. Mm-hmm. You know, it can be as simple as just like they're happier. You know, it can be as simple as just like, wow, that was so funny. I'm glad I got laughs. But to me, the highest compliment is like, wow, like not only did I laugh, but I've never seen anything like that. Mm. That to me, originality is always like what I want. And I don't always get it. Like, you know, some jokes I tell, I admit, you know, sometimes somebody has like a similar concept. I don't take people's jokes. I don't like try to write things that are similar to other people's, but like, I don't claim to be the most original person. I claim to want to be very original, you know?
Gotcha.
So when somebody says like, wow, like I laughed and like that thing that you said that I never thought about that before. Like that's to me the highest compliment. You know?
Gotcha. Well, thank you, man. Hey, much success. Not much success. Much wishes of success. You know, and much respect for your stand-up martyr in the safe space. That's out on YouTube now. Your Netflix show. Everything you're doing. I just want to say I would like backstage passes for your third special that you do in Houston.
Got it.
And I have to let my creative director Shandy say something because she is the reason for this. So I just want her to say something to you.
I'm gonna try not to talk. Okay. Hey.
Hey.
How are you? My gosh. We've been DMing for what all year.
Thank you
now.
So much for hooking this up.
Well, you know, I watch your story, and this is what you wanted, so I had to make it
happen. It is.
That's what I do. I make stuff happen. So I'm so happy that you took time out. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
You look way better than I thought. Wow, you look great over here. Okay.
Who's the comedian here?
Okay, we'll talk more.
I'm the first comedian, so the bar is super low. I love it.
I'll give you a run for your money. Bye.
Bye.
All right, my man. Thank you once again for coming on the show. Everybody listening, go watch Martyr and Safe Space. Go watch 100 Humans on Netflix. Go watch the old Conan clip. Everything that my man has out, watch. And that is it for this episode of the All That Podcast. Peace.
Peace out.